Blog Talk Radio. Of 98 said, "I grow more intense as I age, and I am more passionate about the projects I believe in." And with that, it's the age, not the attitude, that's important, and that's one of our topics we'll be discussing on Blog Talk Radio and how to be comfortable in your own shoes. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome everyone. It's Thursday, July 8th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And thank you so much to my listeners, my fans, for joining us. We love hearing from you, so please call in to listen live or ask questions at 347-857-2710. Once again, those 10 simple numbers are 347-857-2710. And you can also email me at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. And we are here live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific Time. I believe aging is an art, and my guest today has documented proof of that theory. Lori Schur, who is a psychotherapist, transitioned into documentary film in her 50s, and she's made a one-hour film called The Beauty of Aging, which features extraordinary women in their 80s, 90s, and 100s who talk about how to stay engaged in living despite their challenges. This is a beautiful film. I highly recommend it to everyone. So please give a warm welcome to Lori Schur. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lauren. Great to be on your show.
It's great to be here. We're talking about aging moving forward. I just think that
that is a wonderful
topic, because I've spoken to so many people about the quality of life, and today, due to the economic situations of our country, it's about more so how to have a better quality of life. And you have made a wonderful film that features, I have at least three of the five, I believe, women that are in your film. And what inspired you to make a film about aging?
Well, I have to be honest, first and foremost, that I'm aging.
That's a good thing, because the alternative is not, right?
Right. I got interested. Well, two things got me interested. One was that I'm getting older myself, and two, my mom had died suddenly and unhappily just before her 64th birthday. So I had a personal interest in the topic. Was kind of interested to know, were there women out there who were living longer and happier than my mother? And if so, what was that about? And I certainly know about genetics, but I know that genetics is not the only factor in making things happen anymore. People don't think that that's the only reason why something happens in terms of health, but it is a factor, but it's not the only factor. So I have those two things going, my, you know, getting close to the age at which she was no longer living. And so just those two reasons got me into it. And I had interned when I went back to get into documentary film. I had interned on a film that was about some centenarians, people in their hundreds, and just found it very interesting. So I was following that path.
Was it hard for you? Did you have feelings about turning the age that your mother died at? Was that hard for you in your aging process?
Yeah, last year on my birthday, I turned 64, and that was a very challenging birthday. From my psychotherapy hat, I can say it's very common to have what they call anniversary reactions. So it could be, you know, the date that somebody died. It could be when you got divorced. It could be any kind of a situation where you have it remind you of something that happened in your past, or you lost somebody, something like that, or the day of a big earthquake or whatever, if you had a you know, significant experience with that. So, yeah, it's actually been quite a bit uphill since I got past that. But that was a hard birthday. Yeah. I just want to make one correction. My film is still in production, so it's not complete yet. I just want to make that so people will know. Yeah.
And meaning not complete, meaning you have completed the filming, or what does that exactly mean?
I haven't completed the filming. I'm still doing some filming of the women. Life has gone on for them, and there's some changes in their lives, some ill health by one of them. One of the women that I filmed actually had a stroke, and her family has decided they don't want any more filming. Another woman is going through chemotherapy and has taken off her hat and saying, film me. I want the world to know what it's like to go through this and to go through it with a good attitude. So, you know, their lives have progressed, and so there's much more to get in terms of the film. I do have a completed short called Greedy for Life, which is 35 minutes, and it's on two of the women that are in the project. But The Beauty of Aging itself is still being filmed.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. Right. Or life, yeah.
Or life, exactly. So, and how did you come to select the subjects for the film? Did you have a casting call, or how did you reach out to these women?
I knew that I wanted to find women that were doing well, so I wasn't interested in doing a film about nursing homes because there's plenty of that on TV, so I didn't want to do that. So I put out I didn't do a casting call. I put the word out through personal networks and through my documentary networks that I was looking for some women who were doing well and who were older but who were doing well and had kind of a pretty good attitude about life. And I just got referrals, basically. One woman that I got referred for the film came from two different people, so I was kind of definitely interested in that. I wanted to make it the women diverse. I didn't want to do a film on all white women. That comes from, I've got a bachelor's in anthropology and a master's in social work, and I'm very much into diversity. So I didn't want it to just be white women, so I kind of put that in my request as well.
And so you are also a psychotherapist. So how did your skills as a psychotherapist, how did you use that in trying to find the best subjects for the film out of? How many women did you?
I have filmed so far seven women.
Oh, there seven is, women. But how many women responded to your ad?
Well, I didn't do an ad. I just put out to friends. Beyond the seven that I filmed, the oldest one, by the way, died last year. She's 100, at age 103. But I'm not necessarily highlighting all of the women. That may be the five that you were referring to will probably be the five main characters, or maybe even four. Beyond the ones that I actually selected to film, I think I interviewed maybe up to five more people. And I went to different neighborhoods and different, I just was looking for, it was more, it's kind of like it was an intuitive feeling during the interview that this would be a person whose story would be interesting. But there's also, and this was, I'm new into film, so it's not something I could say I have a lot of experience with, but people kept talking about people have to be what they call filmic, so they could be fascinating but very boring to listen to. I mean, fascinating stories, but just not interesting to watch or listen to. So I had to kind of pay attention to that as well.
I guess they have to be loved by the camera.
Right, yeah. Right. That's somewhat subjective, of course. I mean,
sure,
I think,
sure. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the women that I find, they're all very fascinating, all in their own right, but one of the women in particular, because there was an article about this woman in the LA Times, is Hedda Bolgar.
Oh, yeah.
Who is 98 and is a psychoanalyst. And she... Tell me a little bit more about her.
Well, Hedda, first of all, will be 101 next month.
She'll be 100. Amazing.
Yeah.
And she still practices.
Yeah.
She still practices, doesn't she?
Yeah, she still practices. She's like, I almost don't have words for her. She's so well known all over the place. But she's a very wise woman. She's a very forward-thinking woman. She's got great compassion. She has a lot of energy. She still works 4 days a week. She also attends meetings, and she's in her later years has become, she's always been political in her thinking, but she's become much more where she likes the combination of activism, not just sitting in office, but where there's activism along with psychotherapy. So she was part of a team that had a conference combining those two aspects a few years ago. When she was 98, she felt that she was getting too frail after not exercising for 60 years, literally. She'd been a dancer. When she was really young, she was a dancer, but then she stopped. And other than just like life, moving in life, she hadn't really done any formal exercise in a number of years, 60 years, she says. Anyway, she hired a personal trainer who now comes to her house twice a week to work out with her with light weights, take a little walk, and her stability has improved, actually. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I was on your website, which is www.beautyofaging.com, and you are able to go into and meet these individual women and a video clip. And like I mentioned, Hedda's life is fascinating, but what's also so fascinating is how these women got to be where they are today, talking about Hedda and her family, and how her mother was a journalist, and the influences of your life, being an only child, and that's what's even more fascinating, or as fascinating, and how one becomes who they become in their adult life, the influences.
Yeah, she was very fortunate that she was an adored only child, and she'll tell you that, I mean, that she was fortunate, and that she really, her mother was a feminist. So, you know, so many women have been raised to think you have to get married by this age, you have to do, you know, all those shoulds. And she really was raised with a lot more freedom to express herself and be who she wanted to be without those kinds of restrictions.
That's truly, truly a gift because, like you said, all those shoulds can be a detriment because it can prevent each one of us from being who we think we want to be, from expressing ourselves.
Right, right.
And obviously, you know, at age 101, she was born at a time when the social mores were completely different and women did not have their own voice, didn't work outside the home, weren't politically active, etc. And so here's a woman that was shown that you could do that and it was okay to do that, and how she managed to find her own way in life. They're fascinating.
It's interesting for me because I'm a therapist, I've known about Hedda for years, way before I ever got into film, and a friend of mine referred me to her, and I was so nervous to meet her. She was kind of like going to meet some dignitary or something. I was like, you know, I'm a new filmmaker. Why would she want to talk to me? I was having all those doubts and stuff. And, well, anyway, she changed all that. She's just an incredibly wonderful, warm, compassionate woman. And she's become a friend. You know, we occasionally just go out and have a dinner together. She'll say, forget the film. Let's just go have a dinner.
Now, did she marry?
Oh, yeah, she was married. She was married. Her husband I don't know if your callers know about Joan Didion and how her story, she's an author, and how her husband literally died at the dinner table when they were out one night, or at the dinner table at home, but same thing happened to Hedda. They were in New York, and they were out to dinner on a vacation, and she came back from the restroom, and he was dead at the table. So, yeah, it was a big loss of her life, very, very significant. And Hedda had, her father had worked for the underground in against Hitler, and Hedda was, again, very political growing up, but she had wanted her husband's family to leave, to get out, and unfortunately...
He was from Austria also, her husband?
You know, I'm not sure if he was from Austria, but they were together, they were with... I'd have to actually refer to my notes, I honestly can't remember that piece of it, but... She left before he did, and then he came to this country, and unfortunately his parents didn't leave, and they were exterminated in one of the one of the camps. So, but anyway, he was, yeah, she said it, and it's in the little piece on, I think it's in the little piece on the website, that it was a tremendous loss for her. Yeah.
I can imagine. I mean, you related, mentioned the Joan Didion story. I read her book, which it was hard to get through because of the subject matter, very, very sad, but they made a play out of it. And
right.
It went to Broadway, and it got rave reviews, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of the book, but it was just a very interesting story because she and her husband were very interesting people as well.
Yes, so, yes.
That's incredible. Tell me about, you know, who I also loved, LaVada Campbell. She's 82,
yeah.
So she must be now, what, 85 now?
She just turned 86. I've been involved in this project for, this is my fourth year. Yeah, her name is LaVada Campbell. She is, she's the one who, she's incredibly dynamic, and she's a spiritual counselor. She used to do hair. And now she, as she says, well, I have some footage that says at the age of 85, she decided she was going to go into publishing. Someone gave her some equipment. She ended up this year with a spot on her lung and has been going through treatment for that and is just finishing up some chemotherapy. And she's quite a remarkable woman, very willing to share her story. She takes off her hat, shows you, you know, her lack of hair. And she also says that this is true before the chemotherapy, she's not the kind of person who's going to dwell in, oh, I'm so sick and this is what's wrong. She figures this is another, as she calls it, a growth spurt in her life, and is holding on to a positive attitude about that she'll come through this. And I mean, not that she's in denial that nothing could happen to her. It's not that, but she just chooses to look at, she said,
the attitude. It's her attitude,
yeah,
about how
it's
she
her
wants
attitude
to handle. And
yeah.
I guess, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's the attitude or an attitude about aging that it seems all these women that you've focused on have in common. Their attitude on life, how to live life.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we as Americans tend to throw away the older people in our lives,
yes,
in society, because we feel that they are not useful anymore. And it's the young people that are the next generation, and they have supposedly more money to spend and more time, and not necessarily so. These older people have a lot of wisdom to share, and we need to have them around because they're inspiring.
I agree. I just, when you said they have wisdom to share, I couldn't help remember Woody Allen saying that he doesn't have any wisdom no matter how old he gets. So I guess it depends on the person.
Yeah, but he's a man, you know. Yeah. And how much therapy has Woody Allen had? That's a whole other show, Woody Allen, right?
I'm sure he has some wisdom. But anyway, it was just struck me funny. But yeah. Yeah, these women have wisdom, they have stories, they have, I find they're role models of not living in, they go through their feelings, they don't act like nothing's happened, they're able to, you know, but they also live, like you said before, they live, yeah.
So why have you,
I think,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that at least when I started getting into this, besides my own personal life history, with the stuff I see on television, I just figured everyone gets Alzheimer's or goes to a nursing home. One of the most interesting and surprising statistics I've learned, because I've gone to a bunch of seminars and I've presented at some conferences and stuff, apparently only 5% of the American population ends up in a nursing home. And from the media, you would think it would be a lot more.
It does seem, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, so
well,
it's
well,
kind of interesting.
It is interesting, and we're going to have an older population now. People are going to be are living longer, and how does society take care of people living longer?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that go to an assisted living or to a group living or whatever, but I mean, actual nursing home is not as large a number as we're led to believe. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can all live the rest. You know, when we get to that part of our lives, hopefully we can live an independent life and not have to go to a nursing home.
Right.
I sometimes think life is a little backwards, that when we're young, we should go out and explore the world, travel, do all the things that you would want to do when you retire, it's quote-unquote in your golden years, when you have the time. But unfortunately, sometimes those golden years are not so golden. People become ill and things happen, and sometimes you don't have the opportunity to do those things. So sometimes I think life is a little backwards.
Well, interestingly, I agree with you, and interestingly, there's a, I can't think of the name of the book, but there's a woman named Laura Karstinen who's up with the Stanford Longevity Center, and she has a book that she's written, but if people Google her name, they'll find the book. I think it's Karstensen or something like that. She thinks that when people are younger and having families, they shouldn't have to work full-time. They should be able to work with benefits, but it could be part-time working around families. And then as we get older, we could be working more. This is just a whole different theory, but and that many people aren't really ready to retire, and that they would, or they could go into new things, and that if everybody worked 5 years longer, we'd have no problems with Social Security. All that would be covered. And she has this whole other theory. It was kind of interesting to read about. But that when you're young and you're raising a family, if you happen to have kids, it's hard to be a full-time worker and have children and do all of that. So she thinks it should be kind of changed.
I would kind of agree to that. I think that's a great thing, because a lot of people, if it's a couple instead of a single mother raising children, then the woman who just gave birth maybe can only afford to stay with her children for the first year because her job is going to be at risk, and she can't afford to lose her job because she's maybe the breadwinner of the family. Even though the husband may work, she may earn more money than the husband.
Right.
And there's no such thing as corporation employees that if you've worked for us, the corporation takes care of you anymore.
Right. I think what we're both talking about really in a different way is that I think we need expanded ideas of how we do this life, and the way it's set up right now, it kind of locks people into certain ways of being. And so there's many other alternatives that would be great to explore.
That said, what have you learned from your experience doing this first film? And I think that's so exciting. I take my hat off to you for doing that. It's so wonderful. From these various women who have lived these incredible lives, how would you change your life?
For me, it's more of a mental change. It's more of when I go into dark places or get whatever on a more negative side, I try to remember their voices and some of the things that they, you know, talk about or the way they've handled it. Hedda went through she left before Hitler, but she went through that. Her husband's died. One of the women, Shirley Winward, who's in the short film and who is also will be in the larger film, you know, she had a coma. She and her husband separated for a year. They've gone through all kinds of things. So I try to remember the way they've gone through these things. They talk about, you know, some of them happen to be very Buddhist, but living in the present, really being present with what is, letting go of. Hedda thinks one of the greatest things about being old is that she doesn't care what anybody thinks about her or what she does.
I think you're right. I think when I think I'm in that stage of my life that you think more of not about yourself, but the freedom to be you, to find that genuine you, to be you, because who cares what people think? People are going to talk anyway. So you have no control over that. So just go and be what you want to do.
Right. So for me, it's more about what I've learned is that I'm not them, by the way. I've really thought about it. I have aspects of them, but I'm not really them. I've had a similar and a different journey. But I try to take from their attitudes and the way they've gone through things and sort of apply them when I need to. And what I've learned, too, is that it's helped. I guess one of the gratifying, what's been helpful to me is that I haven't even got the film out there. I do have, like I said, I have the short that's finished, and some people have bought that. But just from people going to the website and stuff, I get emails all the time from people who are inspired. And I guess that's been my desire, to inspire and to educate. And so I get inspired and I get educated. And I think that's what I have found other people have said as well.
So what are some of the kinds of feedback you've gotten from emails?
Thank you for doing this, because I was so frightened about getting old, and now I see there's some hope, literally, that kind of thing. Women, including myself, many women, I think, have been afraid to get older, either for a sense of lack of being visible, I'm not going to be attractive anymore, no one's going to look at me, some of that kind of stuff, to how am I going to function, to all of those things. And interesting, I had a whole series of themes that I asked questions to these women as I've interviewed early on in the interviews, and I asked all of them about ageism. And interestingly, not one of them, maybe it's because of who they are, I don't know what the reason is, but none of them have been affected by ageism. None of them have felt that they couldn't do something or somebody didn't want to be around them because of their age. And it could be that they're all sort of magnetic people who draw people to them. And I mean, I went to Hedda's 100th birthday party. There were 100 people there, and they were from kids to her age. So, and they've never had anything related to, you know, I'm not saying that ageism doesn't exist, because I do think it does. But I think it's helped people who have seen them, they've been helped by some of those concerns for themselves, that, okay, well, they can do it, I can do it, they're dynamic, they're living, they're staying engaged, they're doing whatever they're doing. So I think it's given some people, some women in particular have written, hope.
I think you're right, and I think, again, as I said earlier, it is a kind of attitude about how you respond to situations in your life. If you are a career woman and there's a glass ceiling, you can perhaps go into that victim mode and just say, well, it's because of this and the glass ceiling, and you can have more of a negative approach to how you look at a situation as opposed to flipping it around, a more positive approach, and a zest for life, to live life. Every day is a gift, truly, no matter how old you are. Every day is a gift, and every day is different, and every experience is a lesson. You know, you learn from certain things, and I don't know.
Right.
Because some people who are young seem old. So I don't know if it's necessarily an age. It is an age for these women, because it's wonderful to see older women still living independently and engaged and exciting individuals. But I've seen people who are in their 30s who are old.
I agree.
So,
and yeah, and you know, the title, The Beauty of Aging, really wasn't nothing to do with how they look. It really had to do with their spirit. Sometimes I think, as I'm getting older, I'm going to retitle the film The Beauty of Aging, and then I'm going to put a subtitle, You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
I like that.
Because, you know, if we're all honest, there's days we look, for myself, and I have plenty of friends, there's days we look in the mirror and like, oh, my God, how did that happen? How did I get to be that, you know? I was just 10.
Exactly. Where did the time go? I think once I graduated from college, that's when I felt that time began to speed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then ever since, it keeps going by faster and faster. And how did you get here? And when you look back, how did I do the things I wanted to do? And I mean, my mother died from Alzheimer's, and I learned from her passing that life is short, and so that you got to do what you want to do, and we all face our own demons and fears that prevent us from moving forward, but just go through it. You're not going to die from it. You're just going to have to deal with your own little demons and move forward, because obviously if you don't, then there will be a time when it will be too late, and that to me would be a terrible regret.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say go through it with some kindness. Sometimes we do go through difficult periods. I think for me, it's that balance act between wallowing to the point of not getting out versus, I think the other thing, the other extreme for me is just not helpful, at least personally or for my clients, which is just get over it. You know, it's like there's something in between, which is you can feel your feelings and you can go through your process and yet not stay stuck there forever kind of thing.
Is that how you would you give advice to your patients who are having an aging issue?
Well, I don't really give advice. So I don't think I was just thinking more generally.
Or, you know, go through the process. If a client comes to you and happens to talk about their aging and how difficult it is for them, how do you guide them to look at it differently?
I think it's more of wanting to hear what they're experiencing and feeling, and then helping people sort out, you know, what is somebody else's message, what's an old message, what are their strong points that they can focus on. This specifically comes, I recently did a fundraiser for the film, and it was at my daughter's house, and three of the women came, including Hedda. And so people who attended had a great opportunity to ask these women questions and really have a dialogue with them. It was really a fun day. And so there were a lot of questions that were very deep and very meaningful, and there were certain questions about, well, how did you deal with wrinkles and getting older and what you look like and that kind of stuff. And what Hedda said was, it's important to get active in the world, be in community, get into politics, take your mind off of what you look like and get involved in other ways. You know, so I wouldn't, with a client, I wouldn't just say, well, just stop focusing on what you look like and get involved, but I'd be exploring both sides of that coin. How much, you know, do they need to grieve the loss of whatever it was they were thinking about themselves, and then how else can they look at themselves and how else can they be engaged in life? What else can they do? So, I mean, this is a really silly example, but if they're saying, I can no longer wear a bikini, which, you know, is being kind of on the shallow end, but nevertheless, so fine. So what can you do? You know, can you...
I can wear two bikinis. They cover it the same. Or maybe it's three bikinis that cover the same area, right?
You're right. Actually, I spoke to somebody who was telling me now they wear skirts with their bathing suits with skirts.
it all changes. It's all a different look. And I think partly it's society focusing on the young and how you look. And I don't know if you've ever met anyone, especially if you were when you were single and dating, and you met a guy who he was average looking, not a gorgeous guy, but there was that inner beauty, that the personality. He was charming, and because of how he handled himself, you didn't really see. There was like a film on the physical looks. So I think that's how I see older women in a sense. When you look at all these women that you've spoken to, you don't really look at the looks.
No.
That's not important. It's like, wow, you're fascinating. I mean, you're 75 and you're doing this. Incredible. Wow. Look what I can aspire to.
Right.
I happened to meet a woman in an elevator in a condominium building, and we were just chatting a little bit, and she was so cute. She said, yes, my name is Lorraine, and I'm 91 years old. I said, really? I said, you look fabulous. She says, and I live alone. She had her, and you could see the twinkle in her eye, and I could tell that she was that sparkle when she was born with that sparkle. And she was very self-sufficient and independent, and unfortunately the elevator ride was very short. I would have loved to have sat down and just chatted with her.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I do think some of it is, I think all the women in my film were born with a certain kind of a bent towards being more optimistic. But I also think, you know, they've done things along the way. I know that LaBeta got involved in a kind of spiritual community at Agape, and she's, you know, that's had some, helped her along the way. And so they've done things in their life that I think that have sort of nurtured and helped promote those good qualities in themselves. And then again, as they've gotten older, there's a letting go of some of the things just that were important when they were young just no longer seem important. So they're a different focus. I thought it would be great fun to do. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but one of these days I would be fun to do some groups with women. I guess the baby boomer would be most interested, that age group, but kind of like, you know, related to things that I've learned from the film, and then kind of have some opportunity for women to talk together about that and strengthen the things they want to strengthen about themselves.
I think sign me up. I'm in.
You're in. Okay.
I think that would be so great. I mean, I read the obituaries every day, and I'm thankful my name's not there. But you get to read about interesting people. I think what her name is, Eileen Woods. She recently passed away. She was the voice of Cinderella. In the Disney movie. And that movie didn't make Walt Disney, but he was at a particular point in his career as a studio that he was having rough times, and this movie switched things, and how this woman, Eileen Woods, that was her life. And fascinating. She was married to Ed Shaughnessy, who was the drummer on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Wow.
And she died, it was in her early 80s. But what an interesting life. That's why I like to read the obituaries. People do such interesting things. And like you said about the response you're getting from emails, how people are inspired, it is inspiring, because you can see that if someone did something in their time of life, then we can do it too.
Right.
It's very encouraging. It's very encouraging. I want to please tell our listeners where they can go to get Greedy for Life, your DVD.
Okay. Well, they can go to the website, which is www.beautyofaging.com. And there's I think it's right on the front page, there's a place where they can click to buy the DVD.
Okay. And people can contact you from your website also, right?
Yes. If they go to the website and they go to Filmmakers, there's a place to contact me, yes.
And good. So people can contact you from the website. And so what else are you looking forward to complete your film? When do you think your film will be completed?
That's a great question, and I can't answer it exactly. I've gone through different ideas about how I'm going to do the film, and I've just recently rethought again. And then, of course, there's always the issue of funding. So
this could be a funding call. People, please give what you can. Please help Laurie Shore in The Beauty of Aging. We must move forward.
Yeah. A friend of mine who came to the fundraiser said, I don't really think you should finish the film. I just think you should just keep having these gatherings with the women. Of course, they're not available to come all the time, but, it was funny.
That's very true. That's the beauty of it, in a sense that the beauty of aging changes, and then that person ages or unfortunately passes, and then the whole concept of the film changes. You know what I thought would be interesting also is, who is it? I can't think of her name right now. She's a big filmmaker. There's a show at a local theater. But to have some of your women at a theater and tell their story, and then there could be like a Q&A, as it was like a live theater thing. That would be very interesting to meet these women.
Yeah, well, three of them came to the fundraiser, and that's really, they didn't tell their life story, but they indirectly did by answering questions, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was really quite fun. It's just, they're not also, I mean, they all have things going on. They're not, the three that were there, actually head of the 101, almost 101-year-old, is in the best health of the three, amazingly, yeah.
I don't know when that article in the LA Times ran, maybe a few months ago, and I think there was a female correspondent that wrote about her, and just the way this woman wrote the story about Hedda, I said to my husband, I said, I've got to meet her. This woman was so enticing. It left me wanting more. That, wow, just a fabulous woman and a wonderful role model. And I think I was talking to somebody today that I think it's so important for young people, especially, to have mentors in their life in whatever field that they're trying to pursue, but just in general and as a life mentor, to see the possibility of what kind of a life you can have and what life can bring you. It's kind of a crapshoot, but there's so much opportunity.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, great.
Yeah, so great. So, okay, so what's your next film?
I'm still with this. I'm actually finding myself doing a combination of, I'm working on the film. I'm just having some new copies made of Greedy for Life. I'm going to do a push to get that into the educational community. I'm hoping, because apparently, I have to check into it more, but if it could get into some of the gerontology, social work programs, things like that as a teaching tool. So that's another one of my projects. So it all takes time. Because I think it would be a good vehicle for teaching to have that in some of the schools. So that's something else I'm working on. And I'm presenting at a conference. I think it's called the National Service Workers Conference in the end of August. And I'm going to be like using Greedy for Life. I'll be showing the film. And then I'll be leading a workshop on what does aging well really mean and what are some of the – so it'll be both a film, some sharing of some of the research, and then some interactive things that people can do to kind of ask themselves questions about aging. And these are people who work with people. I don't think they're social workers. I'm not clear exactly what they're. It's kind of social work, but it's not exactly social work. But they do work in different facilities, work with the aging population. And so they'll be, actually they asked me to do it twice. I'm doing it twice in one day, the same workshop. So I'm working on different things. You know, I'm working on The Beauty of Aging, but I'm also working on getting Greedy for Life out there, and I'm doing more of marrying my two professions, therapy and film.
Great. And I think I would like to see The Beauty of Aging for men, because then also maybe the single men can marry the single Beauty of Aging women. I think it'd be lovely. Well, you could do a little, matchmaking at the same time. I think it would be a lovely... it would be interesting to see how men fare later in life as compared to women. So it's a very interesting topic. And we are out of time, Lori Shore, and it's been so delightful having you on my show. Thank you so much for sharing your talents and your story about the beauty of aging. And once again, people can go to your website at www.beautyofaging.com. And thank you so much. I wish you much success
with
your
film. Thank you.
Okay. Well, please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my mystery guest will be. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. See you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. Let's close by listening to She's Incredible by Keith Chagall.